Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Believe You Me podcast. And no, that is not Luis J. Gomez. A lot of people said you're giving off a lot of Luis vibes with the bald head, Anthony.
I can't help the bald head. I wish I could. There's nothing I can do.
Oh, mate, you're going to get the hair plugs, Anthony. Would you do that? No, you wouldn't. But prior to, and I'm sorry if you don't want to talk about this, the first opening seconds of the show, and I'm fucking ripping on you for being bold. But would you have got hair plugs prior to losing it all?
I don't think so. Because I've never seen anyone that looked really good with hair plugs. It always looked like, oh, that asshole's trying to hold on to his hair the whole time. I just don't think I could do it. And it looks fucking terrible. In the process of getting it done, it looks like people have had their like razor blades cut on their head. It looks terrible.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, as I said off air before, I reconnected with an old friend at the UFC 270 in Anaheim. So, and he wanted to go out Saturday night, and I had a guy came over from England, like a friend, come over, and I'm like, all right, well, two birds, one stone, because I got to take him out and I got to meet up with this guy. And as I say, I haven't seen this guy in close to 10 years, right? And I Saturday night, I said, there's something different about you. What is it? I said, look at the hair. The hair's looking good. He goes, oh, yeah, I got hair plugs, man, blah, 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 blah. But I got to say, his looked good. Anyway, don't know where that came from. Welcome to the show. Officially, Anthony Smith is on board. We are all very, very excited. We are glad to have you. We have Kelvin Kater joining us shortly. So we've got a great show planned. And yeah, there you go. Welcome to the show, Anthony.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited, man. Every time I've come on and either done an interview with you or done the, you know, you were doing the guest co-host. I had a good time, man. So I jumped all over the opportunity. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, no, that was why. It was that one we did with Renato Laranja. And by the way, we got to get Renato on again because I love that guy. Very funny. And then we did another one as well. And I was like, shit. Because we said at the end, we said, man, that was fun. We should do this with some beers and stuff like that. Yeah. And I totally agreed. So I was like, you know, let's make it happen. Now, of course, wouldn't be the Believe You Me podcast without the reprobates in the background. I am, of course, referring to Mike Harrington and Brian McKay. Harrington, what have we got to start the show?
All right. Well, this one actually starts in your backyard, Mr. Bisping. The mayor of the city of L.A. and Gavin Newsom were both seen in an L.A. Rams game, defying the rules of SoFi Stadium by having their mask down in a luxury suite, taking pictures with Magic Johnson. This comes less than a week after they enforced mandates in schools forcing children to constantly have masks on for the duration of their school day. So, you know, an old example of rules for thee, not for me, from the leaders of L.A. and the California, the greater state of California.
What do you think, Anthony?
Man, that shit is crazy to me. I live in Nebraska, so I don't get too deep into the political side of things, but my world is very much different than it is in a lot of places where, you know, we're for the most part free. My kids are like in a mask mandate in school for like 4 weeks right now. Because the numbers went up. So they put them in masks for a little while. Mm-hmm. And then once they come down, they'll take them off and they'll be fine. But, it seems mighty hypocritical to, you know, to be putting all these mandates in handcuffing people, when you're not willing to do it yourself. If you're going to do it, fine. But, I feel like you got to follow those goddamn rules yourself too.
Yeah. Two words. Oh, it's not two words. I don't know how many it is. Fuck that guy. That's very eloquently put, but I'll just start with that because we've got a similar situation going on in the UK right now with Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister. Same thing. Listen, you know, and we hate to talk about COVID because it sucks, right? And everyone's so fucking sick of it. You know what I mean? But it is what it is. But right now, Boris Johnson is actually under a police investigation because it turns out he attended 12 parties during the lockdown. So he's standing there on TV ordering the lockdown. There was people that couldn't go and see dying relatives, people that had their children dying apparently in hospital, but not of COVID, but because of COVID, they couldn't even go in while their children were dying. And he ordered that. But then this motherfucker's attending parties. Do you know what I mean? And now he's refusing to resign, which all the other, the politicians, whatever, they're all calling for his resignation. And he's smiling and laughing at a hearing. I watched it before. And I mean, how are you going to lead people? And, one rule for them, one rule for us, another for you. It's total fucking bullshit.
Well, even when we were working UFC 270, we had to get on this Zoom call before because the LA County, medical board or whatever. Yeah. So, imagine that. Michael Bisping found his way out of that Zoom conversation.
Right. I did.
But I'm stuck on it listening to like 10 people tell us the same shit over and over. Like this, this restriction, this mandate, you can't be here. You can't do this. You can't do that. And then when we're at the event, they're riding our asses left and right about wearing this mask. And then I don't even live in California, but then this asshole is just doing whatever the fuck he wants, rolling around the suites, taking pictures.
We had to, before we did the event, we had to do a Zoom. I mean, we're going to move on because no one wants to hear fucking COVID talk. But I'm like, listen, anyone who's watched the news or seen anything knows, or anyone that's alive and tried to do anything. Oh, what is it? 6 feet apart, social distance, don't touch your face, wear a fucking mask, don't sneeze in anyone's face. We get it. It's common sense. And then so me and Anthony had to do a bloody Zoom and I was like, I've got something on that day. Can we reschedule? And they said, oh, it's all right. We'll just give you bullet points of what's said in the meeting. Anyway, there we go. Harrington, what else? And I'm scared to say that.
Oh, this one's kind of a fun one. It's an example of how far a team would go to troll a billionaire. So Elon Musk, he's got his own private jet, right, as he's wont to do. And you're the richest man in the world. Of course you do. So this kid set up a Twitter account that tracks every single time that flight logs a departure and an arrival. That's literally all it does. Like, took off from this place at this time, arrived at this place at this time. Elon Musk contacts this kid, says, I will give you $5,000 to shut this down. Kid goes, nah, it's way too much fun trolling you. Make it 50K.
Yeah, well, that's brilliant. I love it. Number one, how the hell does he have access to this information? Clearly a smart young man. Pretty cool that Elon Musk reached out and gave him $5,000. But what do you think he doesn't want him tracking that information for? I mean, listen, it's kind of creepy that some guy's tracking you. Do you think it's bad press or something?
No, I think it's probably a safety concern. I would probably be kind of sketched. Like, what if someone tracked my truck every time it left my house and parked somewhere? I'd probably be kind of weirded out about that. But I would imagine if you're the richest man in the world, there's got to be a security team that surrounds him and dealing with places he goes. Like, I'm sure that's probably a problem for the security team, I'd imagine.
Yeah, he is the richest man in the world. I'm sure he has many, many people that are very capable, that know a particular set of skills that will find him. And will
gotta be worth more than $5,000, though.
Fucking right. $5,000.
The richest man in the world.
What's that to Elon Musk? I can't believe he calls up and says, I'll give you $5,000. Is that what, you're the fucking richest man in the world. That's not even, you've made $20,000 or probably $200,000 whilst we've been on this phone call, motherfucker. How's that meant to be an incentive?
How much work does it take to like create a program that tracks private jets?
Well, that's what he says. He goes, $5,000 wasn't enough to replace the fun that he had working on this. So it's probably a lot of fun.
What a genius.
A lot of work.
To answer your question, Anthony, how long does it take to write a program to track Elon Musk's flight plan? I'm just going to let you know. I don't even know this. I don't know fuck all about writing computer programs. I have no idea. That could be 5 minutes or 5 years. Right,
and I wouldn't know the difference. You could tell me either and I wouldn't fucking know.
No, it's just pretty cool that he got a phone call of Elon Musk, let's be honest. You know what I mean? But who is he? What's he called? Tony Stark. He's the human race's Tony Stark at the minute. He really is. Look at the shit he's doing.
That's a goddamn genius kid, though.
Yeah. All right, Harrington, anything else? Because we've got Kelvin Cater jumping on in 20 minutes. So we'll be forced to get into some MMA stuff unless you give us something very, very good, compelling, worthy, intellectual, perhaps.
All right. Well, I got Okay, yeah, this is kind of interesting.
Oh, God. So a guy, no, don't. If you don't, so just sure. Say no. Do you know what I mean? If you're going to pull it out of your ass, then we know it's going to be bad.
So here's the thing. I was going to go with a movie trailer, which I think is pretty lame, honestly. Like, people are not, you know, they didn't tune into this to watch other people's movie trailers. They could go elsewhere and just have you guys react to that. So I thought of another one that kind of does tie back to Elon Musk. You remember he was selling those flamethrowers for a while.
Yes.
Well, a guy made an attempt. He took a shot at using a flamethrower to melt the snow from around his trailer home, right? Like, you know, his snow was piled up pretty bad in Connecticut over this weekend, and all across the Northeast, we had a blizzard. So he tried his best to use the flamethrower to melt the snow. And of course, his house caught on fire.
Yeah, well,
guys, do not use flamethrowers.
Well, I don't know. I would use the flamethrower. To be honest, yeah. I mean, you can't fault the guy. It throws flames. And the problem you currently have is snow, which melts. I'm like, hold on. I have the perfect thing to get rid of this problem. However, don't point it at the house. Maybe at a safe distance. You know what I mean? You're in Alabama, right?
Nebraska.
Oh, sorry. Nebraska. How was it there? Did you get hit by that cold snap?
No, we didn't get any snow. It's cold as shit here in the Midwest, but you know, I feel like when he was reading that story, I was disappointed he said Connecticut, because I feel like that's something that happens around here all the time. Like, people burn their houses and shit down in the Midwest all the time. Like,
hold on, are you saying people in Nebraska aren't smart, Anthony? Come on. We got a big reach out there, buddy. We don't want you getting attacked.
We do stupid shit, though. Like, Christmas and Thanksgiving, people blow their garages up constantly because they're frying, like, deep frying turkeys and shit.
Oh,
happens
God.
All the time. They'll just drop this turkey in. It'll be partially frozen. You get water and oil that's at 350 degrees, and the whole fucking roof goes up.
Never had a deep fried turkey.
Oh my God, never?
Never. It sounds amazing. I mean, I have to deal with Rebecca Bisping's cooking. You know what I mean?
The last 4 years, that's what we've been doing for like
a
for
whole
holidays.
Turkey.
An entire whole turkey, deep fried.
So where do you get a vat? Is there special makers for it?
No, you can buy a turkey fryer.
And it's how much are they? I know. Sorry, this is a shit conversation.
No, this is a great conversation. Might have. People are gonna love this shit.
Yeah,
it's probably like for the
I'm
whole kit,
starving.
It's probably $100. It's this big, huge thing that you put all the oil in. It's got a like a stand, and it hooks up to a propane. Right there, it is. Right there. Look at that.
I am hungry. I'm intermittent. So that looks very perfectly cooked. Do you cook, Anthony? Tell us something about yourself. We haven't discussed this. Are you a cook? Are you the man at the kitchen in the house?
Yeah, I do most of the cooking. My wife, she likes to cook. She's just not very good at it. I hope she doesn't watch this, but she just doesn't have a real wide range. So the thing she does cook.
Sorry to interrupt. What is like the worst? And I don't want you to talk shit about your wife. We're just having a laugh. But what is like the worst thing that she cooks that isn't very good? Man. And you've got to go, love this.
Anytime she tries to cook like a steak, it's, oh man, it's bad. It's bad. She just overcooks. That's the problem. She overcooks everything constantly.
Yeah.
And she's the type of person, if you give her a recipe, she'll start going through it. And like, I'll be like, here, this is what I cook. Here's the recipe. It's going to be perfect. And then if she sees something in it that she doesn't like, she'll go, I'm not putting that in there. So she'll just start pulling shit out of a recipe that she doesn't like and then cooks it and then is like shocked that it doesn't taste the same.
Yeah.
Like, you keep taking shit out of it. Like, just because you don't like onions doesn't mean the whole thing's going to taste.
Yeah,
like
yeah, 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 yeah. No,
you need
exactly.
to have them in there for the taste.
It's a crucial part of the ingredient. It's a step-by-step instruction. It's like trying to do a triangle. I'm missing out one of the parts. You ain't going to get a triangle. You're going to get a square. What was I going to say? Yeah. My wife's a great cook, so I'm very, very lucky. But but she can't cook a steak. I don't know what it is. You're right. I think it's cooking a steak, and maybe this is a very inappropriate thing to say in 2022, but men cook steaks better. I'm throwing it out there. I'm sorry.
That's how it is in my house. I think she likes her steaks. It drives me goddamn crazy, but she likes hers well done.
Yeah.
Which drives. So then everything she cooks is well done.
Well, how do you like a steak?
If I cook it at home, medium rare. But if I order it, I probably would order a steak medium, because a lot of times you order medium rare and they get, you know, they're way too rare sometimes.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. Medium rare is a tricky one. What I normally order is, and you sound like a prick, but I've heard this in some nice restaurants, so I throw it out there, medium rare plus. So it's kind of like in between medium rare and medium, you know.
Right.
My dad, and you're right, my wife likes it overcooked. My dad, BTF. That's what he says in a restaurant, BTF, burnt to fuck. I'm like, Dad, can you not say that? We're in a nice establishment here. Do you know what I mean? She's a very nice woman. Why are you going to order your steak burnt to fuck?
That's funny. My grandpa, man. My grandpa would eat, if it was like room temperature, he would eat it. Like,
oh, really?
He'd be making hamburgers and shit and take pieces of the hamburger, like the raw hamburger, and just eat it. It's the craziest shit I've ever seen.
I used to work at a slaughterhouse when I was a kid. You know what I mean? And they only did it to freak me out, but they've just killed the cows. And then you've got like quarters and halves of cows hanging on hooks. And when I first started working there, you know, they're probably just fucking with me. You know what I mean? Right. They grab it and they're taking a bite. Take a bite. Today we are welcoming back IP Vanish VPN to the show. You know the deal. IP Vanish has been a longtime sponsor of ours, so it's so great to have them back. And let me tell you about IP Vanish. If you care about the security of your online activity, and you really should, the easiest way to protect yourself is with IP Vanish VPN. Rated 4 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot, IP Vanish provides an encrypted connection for all of your internet traffic, helping to prevent websites, Wi-Fi providers, or even hackers from intercepting your data. You know, we're talking all your financial details, personal information, online activity is completely safe from threats with IP Vanish. Okay, you're not going to get hacked. You're not going to have people logging into your bank account, people hacking your Instagram, your social media, and all that stuff, and changing your passwords and blackmailing you. Believe me, that stuff goes on. Okay, IP Vanish eradicates all of that. And also, if you're in other countries, you can maybe access certain pornographic websites. What do I know? But still, get started. If you're in Abu Dhabi, trust me, it's going to come in handy. Get started with this limited time offer and save 50% off your monthly and annual subscriptions by going to ipvanish.com/believe. 50% off, ladies and gentlemen. One more time, that is ipvanish.com/believe. And that's all lowercase, by the way. Anyway, what was I going to say? All right, so we've got now 15 minutes. Sorry, my eyesight's terrible. 15 minutes before Calvin joins us, and we're going to revisit his tremendous fight that he had. Who did he fight again?
Giga Chikadze.
Oh. What a fight that was. What a fight. So we'll relive that and we'll talk to Calvin and see what he wants next. And obviously we got Sean Strickland fighting this weekend as well. So we've lots to talk about with that. But Harrington, throw something at us, buddy. Give us a topic on mixed martial arts.
A fun one.
Don't.
What?
No, nothing. Just took. Listen, we got to tighten the ship. Anthony Smith is on here. ESPN. SiriusXM. Okay. If I say throw us a topic, it needs to be quick. It needs to be on the money. It's got to be almost instant. You gotta throw it before I ask for it.
How about this for a topic? Dan Hooker dropping down to featherweight. He's got his first fight set up, and it's not an easy one. He's fighting a man on an 8-fight win streak, unbeaten in the UFC, prior to the UK, Arnold Allen. In his featherweight debut, and that's going to be on the March 19th card, which I think also just got two other fights official, Paddy Pimblett's bout, and the one that Paul Craig teased on here just a week ago against Nikita Krylov.
Yeah, so I'll ask you this, Anthony. Obviously, Dan Hooker, tremendous fighter. You know, he's having a great career, you know, but I think you got knocked out against Chandler. You got Kimura against Islam, right? Mm-hmm. He's had some great fights. I called his fight against Dustin Poirier. What a war that was. Going down to 145, he's a big guy already. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? What do you make of that? Because I think people, they go, okay, I want to continue beating people. I want to win fights. I'm going to go down to another weight class where the people are smaller. I'm going to be bigger. I'm going to have a strength advantage and all the rest of it. But I wouldn't say concerned for him, you know what I mean? But I think there's a very good possibility that that could be detrimental to his athletic career, performance, and ability to take a punch. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you just on the physicality part of it, just the actual weight cut, the process that it takes to get down there. And as a guy who moved up a weight class to stop dealing with all that shit, it does bother me. But I think the bigger part of that is he's not losing for any physical reasons. I think sometimes people want to just get a new fresh paint of or a fresh coat of paint on their career, and they think, oh, I'll just switch weight classes, I'll go back down, and all those problems I had before will go away. The issue, and in no disrespect meant at all, I love Dan Hooker, I love his fight style, I love his game. Same. He's funny. It doesn't fix the specific problems in your game that you have. He has a wrestling deficiency. He has a jiu-jitsu defensively, he's just not where he needs to be. I don't think that's going to change at the highest level at 145, and it's not going to change at the highest level 155. You got to fix those problems. I don't think it's a size thing. It's not a speed, strength, explosion problem. You're just not good enough in some of those positions, and that's fine. We all have them. We've all had them our whole careers. I just wish he would, maybe have a clearer view of where he is, technically and skill wise, and maybe just take some time, maybe back off of the competition level a little bit while you're fixing those problems. You know, like you've already had some problems at the top of the division. Just go down the rankings a little bit, fight some of those up and comers, those not as dangerous guys, and work on fixing some of those holes in your game.
Yeah, no, totally agree with everything you said, and you're absolutely right. They do use it. I used it when I went down to 185. It's almost like doing a hard reset on your career. Yeah. I know I've had some ups and downs. I've had some losses, but guys, guess what? I'm going down to a new weight class. So boom, we're starting this career all over again. Forget all about that and let's start Dan Hooker the featherweight. But it doesn't work like that. And as you said, I'm in the submission specialist at 45. You know, what happens if you run into someone there again? And you've had an even harder time making weight. Like Callum, and I don't need to explain this to you, of course, but so my son, he's a wrestler at college. He got heavy, he had a torn meniscus, and then he got COVID, whatever. But he was undisciplined in that period, and he got heavy. So making weight, he had to do like a hard cut on the day of like 15 right. pounds, right? And then wrestle half an hour later. So sadly, you know, he didn't win his match. But then that was on the Saturday. Then he had to do it on the Wednesday. Then he had to weigh in again on the Thursday. Do you know what I mean? So that was, he's almost killing himself. And then at the weekend, he had to do it again. But fortunately, by now, a couple of weeks passed, the cut got a bit easier. He had two matches. He said, I won one and he lost the other one. And he said, I just felt so deflated, so tired, so weak. And you know, Anthony, I mean, what was it like for you making 185?
It was terrible. It was terrible. And here's the issue that I think some people run into, and they don't either they don't recognize it or they don't acknowledge it. But it was getting to the point where I didn't even give a fuck about the fight. The weight cut was so hard that I just, once it was over, like that was my hardest fight. I fought with the scale. And once I made the weight, I couldn't, even during training camp, I couldn't even focus on the fight. It wasn't even the opponent that kept me up at night. It was the weight cut. And then once I made the weight, then I could focus on the fight. So I only had about 24 or 30 hours to actually think about the fight and the opponent and get myself mentally prepared for what I'm about to do, because I was only focusing on the scale. So, and then just the physical part of it was terrible. I mean, there was, when I fought Thiago Santos, was my last fight at 185. I remember waking up that day and I was like, I just don't even want to do this. I'm exhausted. I feel like shit. You've had some hard cuts, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Once you make it, and then like you start eating and drinking again, then it restarts your stomach and your system. But then your stomach is just trashed. You feel awful. It's just the last thing in the world you want to do is fight. You just don't even feel like doing it.
And let's be honest, these extreme weight cuts, which I would love to see eradicated. I'd love to see people, I'm not saying you can't cut a few pounds, you know what I mean? But this trend of these incredible weight cuts, it's got to change. And I think we'll see better performances from the fighters. Right. The mm-hmm. fans are going to have a better experience. The fighters are going to be way more energetic. They're going to enjoy the process more. And it's not as dangerous. You can take a punch better. So that fight you mentioned there with Thiago Santos, right? Am I right? You lost via knockout, right?
Yeah. A body shot. Yeah.
Oh, it was a body shot.
It was a body shot.
So it wasn't to the chin.
No.
I'll fucking ignore everything I was about to say.
But he did drop me before that.
Because I was going to say it affects your ability to take a punch.
It did. It was, and you know, he moved up shortly after as well. So like as good as that fight was for the fans, I hear about people, you know, people talk about it all the time. It would have been so much better had we both been at 205 like we are now. Because neither one of us were taking shots. Every time we touched each other, we were sitting down. I truly believe that the sport would get that much more exciting if we got rid of the drastic weight cuts. Like now that I'm a little heavier now, but like my weight cut to 205 is almost nothing. It's really easy. So I just imagine what everyone would feel like if they all felt like me and they just refreshed.
And essentially, it comes down to this for the fighters, because you know what happens with fighters. They work for a train. Not all people, but I think this is the general rule. They train for a fight, they get down, they get nice and lean, they get in shape, and then they balloon up afterwards, you know? And here's what I said to Callum. I said, listen, bud. I said, you've gone through hell these last few weeks, but I tell you what, I'm so fucking proud of you. As your father, now I know you didn't get the results you wanted, because it's impossible to wrestle after you've just killed yourself and you've just done 12, 13 pounds. You can't. And he said, no, Dad, I felt so bad. I said, but you upheld that side of your bargain. So I'm really, really proud of you. But what you have to do now is follow a year-round diet, or at least when it's coming up to the wrestling season, at least a few months before, and walk around that almost that weight. You know what I mean? And that's what people need to do, because the reality is you're almost killing yourself the day before a fight. We wrap ourselves up in cotton wool. We go for massages. We follow a strict diet. We work out 2-3 times a day, 5 days a week, actively 6 days a week, active recovery on your day off and all this type of stuff. But oh, I know, let's almost kill ourselves the day before. And I did it. You know what I mean?
So no, you couldn't have said that any more perfect, because that I've said something similar. Like, we do all these things to turn ourselves into these just athletic machines. Everything is tracked. You got coaches tracking your heart rate. You're doing all these strength and conditioning sessions. You're eating all the right food. You are just a goddamn monster. And then you fucking wreck it all the day before.
Yeah.
Everything. You just trash it all. You might as well come
out the fucking window.
I might as well come off the couch. It's the same shit. I'm as good as if I just came off the couch after doing weight cuts like that. So
it's crazy.
You couple that with, you know, maybe some of the technical deficiencies he already has. You know, I just don't know where there's a positive there.
That right there. That's why you're the pro. That's why you were the choice for the co-host. Because after all that bullshit, going off on a tangent, me talking nonsense, you brought it back.
You brought it back.
The topic that Harrington said. So good for you. Yeah, and Arnold Allen's a tough fight as well. Wouldn't be fair to mention Arnold, my countryman, of course. 8-fight win streak.
Is it fair to call him the pride of the UK? Like Harrington's dead.
No, we don't call him the pride of the UK. There's only one pride of the UK.
Okay, so I had to make sure. I was a little thrown off. I was a little thrown off when he said that.
Yeah, Leon Edwards right now. No, so shout out Leon as well. But we got to move on. Harrington, I see you trying to talk shit in the notes. You're trying to mislead Anthony and I into talking shit about Israel Adesanya, who has a middleweight title defense next weekend, pay-per-view. But you're putting in the note, oh, he looks like he's taking steroids again. Essentially is what you said.
I didn't say that. I said a couple of active Reddit users were quick to screenshot. Well,
fucking hell, if a couple of randoms on Reddit said it.
I mean, look, this is the heartbeat of the sport, right? I'm a man of the people here, Mike. This is I'm just tapping into what the UFC fans around the world are talking about and what they want to hear two pros like you guys talking about. And that is, you know, they looked at Israel Adesanya's Instagram. He posted a story with a couple of his training partners, and they noticed that same issue that Sean Strickland brought up a couple of weeks ago, right? That deflated pec on Israel Adesanya seems to have made a
return.
Can
we see this, Brian?
Yeah.
Sorry, Harrington, go on.
No, you're good. I mean, exactly that. I think the photo is going to speak way more than I can, but it shows the it shows the deflated pec that he had. I believe it was heading into the the Błachowicz fight.
Regardless, yeah, doesn't matter. But I know what you're talking about. Harrington just there. It is.
There we go. Yeah, so you can see the droop there noticeably on his right hand side.
It's always about this time that he's about to fight too. I wonder if it's I don't know. It's always right before he fights. It's the weirdest thing. I don't know if it's just a weight cut thing or I don't know what it is. It's weird.
My question is, and I am automatically inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt. You know what I mean? And I don't know how you feel, but in this day and age, such a high profile fight with USADA, right? I just don't see it. And certainly, what the fuck is he taking that only affects his right breast? Do you know what I mean? If they were causing your tits to droop, surely two tits would droop, Brian.
Maybe he just lifts weird.
Yeah. There could be a bunch of, I'm not a doctor. I don't know shit about shit, but he's addressed it before. I think he addressed it with Ariel one time, but he never actually said what it was. He said he'd been to the doctor a couple times and they were trying to figure it out. It is just, you know, I'm with you, Michael. There are guys that I'll accuse outright right away. And I'll stand by that. Adesanya is not one of those guys. He doesn't come off to me. You've been in training rooms. You've been around a long time too. You can kind of peg the guys that have the look or you know, you can just have a feeling. We hear shit all the time. Israel hasn't been one of those guys. Izzy seems like he's a pretty straight shooter. He doesn't have the body of a, you know, some crazy steroid freak that's just out here, you know, juicing to the gills. So I would never accuse him of that. It is weird, though, that it does tend to happen right before he fights the last couple of fights.
Maybe it's like, I don't know what it is. I'm reaching and trying to find something, but I don't know. Build up of the testosterone or whatever. It's something going on, probably a hormonal imbalance of some type. One would assume. With my, again, I'm no doctor and I'm not particularly well read on hormone imbalances in young men as you increase your cardiovascular activity, right? I never suffered with it. But when you look at Adesanya, when you factor in his success as a martial artist and how good he is, right? How precise and how good his kickboxing is and all the rest of it. He's not a guy that needs to be out there taking steroids. Maybe I'm wrong, but he gets a pass from me.
His game's not really built on like crazy power and explosiveness. He's tricky. He's a sniper. He plays a lot of tricks in games. He's not really built on just that one punch knockout power, just punching through shit.
So those Reddit users are idiots. Is the final judgment of the Believe You Me podcast. And by that, so are you, Harrington. Sorry, buddy. Who do you see in that fight, Anthony? How do you see that going, the rematch, him and Whitaker?
If Whitaker can get a takedown, I think he can change the whole game. And that, again, that seems very simplistic. Very low-hanging fruit from an analyst perspective. But I think Whitaker's did an interview somewhere and he said something along the lines of Blachowicz kind of wrote the book on how to beat Izzy.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't, for as much trash as people might give or shit as they might give Blachowicz right now, he did kind of fight the perfect fight. Everyone forgets that he hung very well with Izzy on his feet and kept the fight close enough to win at least one of those rounds striking. I'm not sure if Robert Whittaker can do that. I think all the wrestling that Jan did in the later part of the fight was set up by the striking in the beginning of the fight. There's not a lot of people on the planet that can do that with Izzy.
And that is essentially it. And that's because Izzy's so good on the feet. It is about taking him down. If you're forced to fight him on the feet, I'm not saying you can't be successful. You can, but you're going to have a way harder time. Kelvin Gastelum did great. Shorter guy and all the rest of it, but he pushed him to the absolute limit. So, we'll see how that one plays out. Can't wait for that. I mean, that's 2 weeks away. It seems like, well, it was just last week. We were at UFC 70, but they're coming thick and fast this year. You know what that means for us, Anthony? More pay-per-views, more work, more cash in the bank.
Going to Houston.
Thank you very much. go on, Harrison, what we got?
Well, I was thinking about this, you know, when Anthony mentioned the top of the featherweight division, especially, you know, we have Calvin Kattar, a big contender coming on. He was number five in the All right. Well,
speak
I'll just jump
of
right
the
off then.
Absolute devil. Just finish your thought, Harrington, real quick. That's a hell of a beard you got there, Calvin.
Thank you.
You look like Thor or someone out of one of those Marvel magazines. I cannot grow a beard like Harrington. Just say that real quick because it might be a question for Calvin.
Well, I was just going to say Zabit. He said he's coming back February 28th. He's going to smash someone and then release the video of him training. I was going to ask who you guys think he's fighting and how you think it's going to go after 2 years off.
Good question.
So, Jeremy, sorry, what am I saying? Calvin, you answer that, please, because obviously your division.
Yeah, no, I mean, we'll see, man. He's going to have to go out and earn it again. Two-year layoff, let's see. He did good before he took the layoff, but we'll see who he is now. But I feel like I've grown in the last 2 years, so I think that one should make for a fun matchup again.
Yeah. Anyway, let's do the official introduction. You know what I mean? Just jumped on there. Thank you, number one, for joining us, Calvin. Yes, really, sir. Really appreciate it. Lots to talk about. Sensational fight recently. Welcome to the Believe in Me podcast. Thanks for your time. Thank you, Anthony Smith, of course, who I'm sure you are very familiar with. And yeah, I guess we'll just start with this. I mean, it's been a couple of weeks now since that fight, or even 3 weeks maybe. When you look back on that, and I'm sure you had a chance to watch that, how do you assess your performance? And I mean, because I'll start, that was incredible. What a fight that was, man. And yeah, when you watch back, how do you feel about it?
I feel good. I'm glad we were able to stay disciplined, stuck to the game plan. You know, landed the takedown, kind of took most of that steam off his shots in that first round. And after that, the best defense was staying on offense, staying behind the jab, pressuring him, smothering his shots. If you hear his breakdowns, he talks about needing space for everything he sets up. And we just wanted to take that away and you know, make it more of a boxing range fight. And the elbows were just, you know, happening on the fly. I felt like I was landing some good shots there. I felt like he was going to go down soon. But in hindsight, maybe touching the body would have been a little bit better. Might have got him out of there.
Man, you know, even everyone at the desk, you know, I worked the desk for that event. Everyone seemed to really be talking about this Giga kick. They just talked about it over and over and over. And then everything I seen you talk about, you just kind of blew it off. You're like, yeah, whatever. Like, he's got one thing. I got 100 he's got to worry about. And then I had your coach on talking with him. And he kind of had the same idea. Like, it was what it was. It wasn't that big of a deal. Did you guys really just kind of blow it off as here's how we deal with it and then move on to the next thing? Or was that really a focus in your camp?
I mean, it was a focus, but I mean, like you said, I just would be more worried about the guy that has a lot more to threaten me. You know, looking for the kick, definitely one of our plans is just, you know, not staying open stance for him to land it, because that's usually when he's putting people down with it. But it's a good kick. I was training with Ross Levine a lot for this fight. He's a karate combat fighter, solid karate, but he's a 185-pound fighter. You can imagine what he walks around at a couple weeks out from his fight, you know, last couple weeks. It's been rough, man. I was like, if I could take this kid's kicks, man, I'm not really worried about the Giga kick, but it was clean. He did land it a couple times, but it's not like he caught me with, like, I wasn't like engaged with my stomach or anything like that. Didn't catch me mid breath, nothing crazy. And I felt like that was mostly what he had to offer, you know, showing the kick or setups behind it and things. And I felt like the more we could pressure, it'd be, you know, making it real difficult for him to get off those kicks. But back to what you said, man, appreciate the love from you guys. I heard some of the pre-fight stuff after, you know, after the fight and things, but everyone else was counting me out. So appreciate you guys at least giving me some respect. I felt like,
come on, Calvin, come on.
Nothing the week before the fight. You know?
Yeah.
See, you know what? I do appreciate that though. Everyone gives us a bunch of shit when, you know, maybe we don't give them the credit they think they deserve. No one ever comes and says, hey, man, I appreciate you sticking up for me in some of those spots.
Because sure,
I think I was the only one at the desk. I'm like, you guys are crazy.
Yeah.
Like, Calvin Kater's a thug, man. He just walks forward. So a
lot of similarities,
I appreciate that.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, I'm so glad I don't have to do the desk anymore. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I will be doing the desk at some point. But now, basically, what I'm saying is commentating, you can't make a pick. You know what I mean? That hasn't been told us from the UFC. You know what I mean? But it's not a good look if the commentator's out there publicly saying, I think this guy's going to win. So I have that eradicated. In the fight, obviously, Giga kick is his big thing. Did he ever get you, though, and you were like, ooh, I felt that one, and you're trying to pretend that he never got you? And you know how it is when you eat a body shot. It fucking hurts. And you're like, but you're like, just play possum, we're good.
Yeah. No, actually, the worst one of those I got, probably, I don't even know if he knows it, but it was my debut fight against Andre Feely. The last, like, 10 seconds in the whole damn fight, I think I let him up, and he just threw off one last, you know, see you later, goodbye kick. And felt like something was moving around in my ribs there. It was like the worst shot I took all fight in the last 10 seconds. I was bullshit. I was like, you got to stay focused the full, you know, fight. But the Giga's kick, he hit me with a couple good ones. Don't get me wrong, but nothing that was – if I would have got hit with five in a row, you know, that would have been something different, or just kind of unleashing it. But I felt like after I ate one, I was like, oh, shit, let me pressure this guy a little bit. And then it never got to that point where I felt like I was going to take a needle or anything like that.
All right, Calvin, let me jump in here, because – obviously, we're going to ask you about the Korean Zombie versus Volkanovski and all that shit, okay? But tell me about, because I've never, you live in Boston, right?
Just 30 minutes north, yeah.
I've never been there, right? But I've seen enough movies and I hear enough people talk and I hear it's a tough place to grow up and all the rest of it. But what was your life like? Who was Calvin Kattar pre-UFC? You know, just tell me what it was like growing up in your neck of the woods and, you know, yeah, a bit of your background.
I was like the youngest of three siblings, you know, 4 years younger than the oldest, 2 years younger than the middle child. So I felt like all their friends and things kind of always messing with me, picking on me, making me earn it and things, and always trying to play that little brother syndrome, you know, trying to catch up to the big brother and then everybody else's friends and stuff. So I was hanging out with the big boys, you know, a little young. They're all roughing me up. And then finally, I joined the wrestling team back in high school, and kind of everybody slowly stopped kind of picking on me, messing with me. And then my brother actually would get, you know, jokes from me starting to whoop on his friends for picking on me. He used to stop picking on me. He started getting on my side. But I joined the high school wrestling team. Prior to that, I had no real experience. No one in my family had really wrestled much or fought. Just kind of something I gravitated towards. I saw my sister's best friend take his first fight. And I was kind of hooked from there. Out of high school, I missed the feeling of competing wrestling. And so I started doing a little jiu-jitsu. It was a lot easier than wrestling. You know, it wasn't like that back in wrestling sucks, man. You know, it's a lot. So doing jiu-jitsu, I was like, I can do this. You know, it was a little easier transition from being a fat boy after high school wrestling. And then I took my first fight, and I've been hooked since, man, that adrenaline rush. I feel like there's always tough kids from my area, and they kind of get themselves into trouble with street fights, things like that, just dumb stuff. And I felt like if they could have aligned themselves, done something better with it, that a lot of people could have made it out of this way.
Yeah.
Hey, man, this is funny. I talked about this with Tyson, actually, when I had him on. I think you and I are probably
and that's Calvin's coach.
Yes. Yeah. Fantastic.
Just trying to tell the listeners.
He's a fantastic guy to talk to.
You know what I mean?
I think you and I are part of like a small group of people that we're like in a club that we don't want to fucking be in for sure. you know, like your fight with Max, you know, I would probably guess you think that's the worst performance of your career. I had a similar awful performance, you know, versus Glover Teixeira and, you know, the whole world shits all over you. But, do you feel like you were born the way you were born to be able to go through fights like that? And then come back stronger. Do you think that's something that happened like in your childhood and upbringing? Like me and Tyson talked about that a little bit. Like are tough motherfuckers like that? Are they born that way or are they made that way?
I feel like a lot of it has to do with what I've been through. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just that adversity. It just, it makes you want it that much more pushed through. At least for me, I feel like some people get small from it. Some people get big. It either backs you up or you're kind of, for me, I just respond always well for it. Just don't deal with it since I was a kid, kind of. Yeah, just doing things the hard way. It was never always the best, but that's the only way I learned a lot of times. I always said, man, the people I lost to in wrestling, if I could have just punched them, you know, I felt like I would have done better. And then post high school wrestling, I found my sport. It was a lot of kids that would beat me would be like riding legs, but I was telling you, man, it's different when you start throwing punches, you get them like. Shows how bad you really want it when you start inflicting damage, taking damage. You know, I said before the fight when I was fighting Giga, in my head, I was like, let's drown. You know what I mean? In my head, I was gonna drown first. You know, go take them to the deep end and let's drown.
Do you think that performance, like the shit that you went through in the Max fight, do you think you carried some of that with you into the Giga fight? Because I remember fighting Glover, right? And then after that, I remember thinking like, no one's going to ever, like, that's probably never going to happen again. Like it was, that's worst case scenario. So I almost feel like now I know how far I can go. And I don't think there's a lot of people that can go that far. Do you, is there some sort of weird confidence you get from that?
Yeah. I don't like to rely on the toughness, man, but you know, but if it is what it is, man, at the end of the day, I don't care how I got to get it done. It's getting done, you know? But, yeah, there was plenty of motivation coming off the Max fight. And then add to the 1 year layoff, 6 months of that was being cautious. The other 6 months was timing. But, you know, developing that patience and sitting on that for a year and then added to, you know, a 7-0 contender that was overlooking me calling out the champ.
Yeah.
And being a 2-1 dog and everyone kind of going against me. It was kind of all those things just spiraling into one. And I don't really like to respond too much in the media side. Like, I just kind of get quiet and really want to get to work. And, just save it all for fight night. I knew the more he jocked for wanting to be a title contender, he was only stating my case after I beat him.
As you brought up there, Anthony, the fight with Max Holloway, and we'll move past that onto maybe something that's a little more complimentary for you. But you're right. You don't want to rely on toughness, but it's definitely a fucking ingredient that you need if you're going to do what we do or did in my case for a living. When you hear, and I forget what the stat is, it was like something like 500 or something shots, right, that you ate. Do you know what the number is? Do you answer any of
them? No, but I heard a crazy stat too in the last two fights. I took more than probably like 90 something percent of the UFC.
Nobody wants to hear that as a fighter. Yeah. This motherfucker teed off on me 500 odd times, and he has the record for hitting someone in the face more times than anybody else. Mm-hmm. So like, when you hear that, does that give you motivation? Does it get you angry? Does it want to get your ass in the gym? Or do you just say, you know what? Fuck it. I'm proud of it. That's who I am. I will continue. You do have to fucking kill me to stop me. You know what I mean?
I just focus on what I can control, man. That's just the next rep. I can't really change the past. I kind of like learned that. Just move on. Everyone else is kind of bringing it up, and I don't really sweat it to the point even answering the questions. I don't give it that, you know, either. I took all the motivation from it I possibly could. I picked up everything I can from it, and I've been through that in setbacks. You know, I've pled plenty. Like I said, everything I've been through. You don't want to forget them, but you also want to move past them and take the learning lesson from it, or else why go through it in the first place, right? So a lot I took up in that fight, but now I'm preparing the next one. They always, you know, say the biggest one's always the next one. That's the only one that's in my control, and that literally takes my focus. But even before that, I bring that down to like a day by day. Even I break down the day like that. I'm on to breakfast, then lunch, then dinner. Like I don't even get too far ahead. I just try to stay in the moment, and that's even down to the bigger picture, like the fights, you know? I just always focus on the next one, man. That last one, I definitely have a lot to take from that, but I'm not even so much worried about that more than everything that I'm trying to achieve. And these are like, my opportunities are right in front of me. I'm looking forward, man. I'm trying to pull those closer, and every win does that for me.
And so let me ask you this. Obviously, you're in the UFC, you're main eventing, you're a very established name, and I'm sure you have that title fight on the horizon, right? I'm sure you are working towards a champion. But at what point did you like realize, hold on a minute, this can be a reality, right? Because I don't know about you, but I'm sure we've got kind of similar backgrounds. I was always getting into scraps and stuff like that. And then you discover some martial arts, you get a little bit of structure or wrestling, whatever it is, you know, and you start cleaning up your act and you think, okay. And then you get in the UFC and you're like, oh shit, okay. Now I've made it to the UFC. Now I'm winning fucking fights. Now I'm in the main event. And hold on a minute, fuck me. This dream, this journey of doing this one day, this could be a fucking reality. And the UFC world title is there to take. You become a fucking legend, make some real proper money. I mean, do you see that? Can you smell it? Can you taste it?
Yeah, I never doubted myself that I can get to the UFC, but I'm still proving it to myself that I belong against the best in the world down to every fight. Even this last one, you know, I lose this. How quick these narratives and storylines change. You know, I lose this from 0-2. Now my back's against the wall. You go 0-3 in here, you might get let loose. You know what I mean? So then who are you then? Real quick, shit can change, man. I don't overlook that. I take that, you know, responsibility, and I put that work in every day. I earn it every day, and I don't overlook the fact that at any moment it could all be taken from you. So I think if you just continue to try to have the mindset of earning it every day, then you'll be in a good position. But I'm proving it to myself every day. Even this last win, I'm like, yeah, motherfucker, I told you guys all doubt me. You know what I mean? 7-0, fuck that. You know what I've been through? I'll bring it right there too, man. But that's on the inside. I try not to let that out because that's like, it's powerful, man. If you hold that in and just, you know, keep your mouth shut, get to work. And I don't want to give away all my chips, man. I save them. When it's fight day, I'll go all in. But other than that, I'm keeping all the chips. I'm greedy with the chips, you know. Keep feeding me all this motivation. I'll take it.
Well, so with all that motivation coming off of that fight, who are you looking at next?
Yeah, honestly, like, there's my keep it's kind really, of tough I, stopped, up there. I stopped picking fights when I got to the UFC. Like, and even then, I didn't really pick fights. I was fighting back in the day when, like, tough people would fight tough people to get to the UFC. Right. And, like, me and Rod Farnham fought. You know what I mean? Me and Rod were number one and number two in New England. And we were about to fight. And then Tyson was managing Rob at the time, or coaching him as well. And I was the outsider. They were going to line it up. But Tyson's like, no, man, I want to see you both get to the UFC. That's how, like, long story short, started working with us both. But back then, me and Rob were going to fight. And now it's like it's a little different, but as far as who's next, like I stopped picking fights when I got to UFC. You make it there, that's when you just got to fight everybody, you know.
And right.
For the most part, I don't care to get, you know,
there's got to be someone that stands out though, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. Come on.
So this is what I'm saying. I think I'm going to fight them all is what I'm saying. I just don't care what order, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm going to fight all these guys. I'm hoping as long as I keep winning fights and I stay in the mix, which is what's, you know, in my head, that's, I work so hard every day, no one outworks me, but I don't care what order, you know what I mean? I really don't care. Whoever brings me to the champ, He's got, you know, him and Max got my highest respect for just the what they do with the actions, not so much the microphone. Like they earn it, you know what I mean? So those are two fights. One, I want to get Max back definitely, and you know, the people would after that fight probably wouldn't want a round six. I'm looking forward to it, you know. So whenever that fight happens, great. The champ, love to get that one, and he's the priority obviously. But next is whoever gets me to him. If it ain't him, who gets me to him? I don't care who that is.
And when you look at Max Holloway, if he did fight Volkanovski the third time, how do you think that would have went down?
Man, I don't know, but I would love to have seen it. Both just cleaners, man. Cleaners. They get after. I'd love to watch that matchup. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to tell you a clear winner for sure, you know, so it makes
me. Who would you rather punch in the face as hard as you can, right? They're not going to move.
Everybody's
not
going to move. Everybody
just get to tee off. He's standing right there. You get to fucking run up as hard as you can. Bang! In a competitive environment, Alexander Volkanovski or Max Holloway. Basically, if you were going to assault somebody in the street and it had to be one of them, who would it be?
Damn, that's a good question, man. I don't know.
I know, I'm sorry.
That's not really my style, man. I like to hit them when they're looking at me. You know what I mean?
Of course.
They ain't get paid for it. Like I said, man, a lot of tough kids from this area, they went that road. They ain't getting paid for it nowadays. So I'm grateful to be getting paid. And whoever is next, man, like, it's nice. It's nice to have Tyson focus on all that. Like, I just focus on the meat and potatoes, the training. You guys know how it is, man. I don't want to focus on more. I'd rather focus on less, just the training. And whoever he says next, it's a signed contract. Let's go to work, you know. And I know that day's coming sooner than later. I'm going to have a next fight in the UFC, so I'm just getting to work on it now. I don't know who it is. In my head, I'm planning on, you know, the replacement. It's not happening yet, but they said they're going to let me know as a replacement for Volkanovski and Zombie. So stay ready for that. And
if you're going to be on standby just in case shit hits the fan.
I'd like to. I mean, why not? You know, it can't hurt. I'm waiting to get a okay from the UFC. If that is the case, they're going to let me know in a certain time frame. But once they do, if they let me know, and even if they don't, in my head, it's like try to chase that dog in a bone. You know, I'm like, yeah, hey, something happens, they're going to want me. So keep my ass in the gym, stay ready. Just another reason to focus on it and get ready for something, have something to compete for.
What do you think of that fight, the Zombie and Volkanovski?
It's not the fight that we asked for or wanted, but it's the one we're going to get. Hopefully it pays out. I think it'll make for an exciting matchup for sure. I mean, like, I don't think those two guys could be in a fight without it being exciting. But I mean, you would think the champ, right? But we'll see what Zombie does.
I'd imagine he'd be favored, probably. Yeah. You know, he's probably the favorite.
Yeah.
Probably pretty goddamn exciting, though, because I don't think the Zombie's going anywhere.
Exactly. I'm excited about that one.
Where are you right now, Rob? Because you look, I mean, it looks like a very plush environment you're in. There's a nice little, is that the kitchen? Is that a wall unit? Right, I mean, you got some fucking nice furniture in the background.
Drink,
what's that?
Can I make you a drink?
Oh, please. What is that? Is that your bar?
Oh, no, it's my brother Seth. I'm over his house right now. Can you guys hear me? Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah. No, we lost you for just a split second.
Okay, hang on. Sorry. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we got you, buddy.
All right. Well, you can hear me. I don't know why I can't hear you, but I'm going to just go along with it and say I got a phone call from the matchmaker right now. We're promoting the next event. I promote local events here in New Hampshire, New England area. And we have our next event at the Encore Casino here in Boston. It's going to be a big one. St. Patrick's Day. I'm pumped about it. But I had fought for Combat Zone prior to getting to the UFC 9 times. I'm 9-0 at Combat Zone. I took over ownership when I was like 25 and been promoting.
Oh, shit.
And I took a 3-year layoff from fighting. It was kind of crazy. And then I lined up with Tyson and Rob and everything, kind of worked my way back. When UFC was coming back to Boston, it kind of struck my whenever it made me want to kind of reach out for it. And then, I've been doing the Combat Zone since I was 25, and we got our next event coming up. But
amazing.
Just over my brother's house right now, handling some business for the upcoming show. I don't know why I can't hear you guys, though.
So you can't hear us, but we're going to say farewell. Can you hear me?
Thing. Let me refresh it. One second.
It's okay. No. He's fucked off. He's gone. Don't have him back on, Brian. How dare he hang up? Combat Zone. Combat Zone something. If you're in the Massachusetts area, please check that out. Do you think he's going to come back? I don't know.
I don't know. I like that guy, though.
Talking. Oh, no, Calvin Kaye is fucking awesome. And what a fight that was. Talking of, hey, up, there he is.
There he is.
Sorry, no, guys, no, no. We got the video guys to edit this stuff, right?
Hey, don't worry about it. Yeah. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Sorry.
Oh, shit.
I got a phone call from the manager, man.
Hey, mate, listen. This show never goes to plan. So it's all part of it. It's right on trend. It's on brand for us. We'll let you go on that note. So Combat Zone happening. Yeah. When is that? St. Patrick's Day?
Yep,
in the Massachusetts area. If anyone's from around there, check it out. Calvin, thanks, man. I appreciate you joining us. I know you're at your brother's house, so we don't want to take up too much time. So, yeah, good luck with the show. Can't wait to see the next fight. Looking forward to it. And, yeah, all the best with everything else. And no doubt we'll bump into you soon.
Likewise, man. Big fans of you both. Good talking to you guys. And look forward to next time.
Thanks, man. Oh, take care.
Thanks, Calvin. Really appreciate it. Thank you, buddy. Likewise. Thanks, man. Yeah. And in fact, that actually gives us a good segue because at the weekend, did you watch Eagle FC?
It was on. I had some people over at my house. It was on, but I did watch Rashad. That's why I had it tuned up there. I watched a couple of the earlier fights and then watched my man Rashad.
Yeah, that was the thing for me. That was my main event, if you will. He wasn't the main event, but Friday night when it came on, Eagle FC, free to stream. I thought he did a great job. The stream was good quality and all that type of stuff. There was some hilarious microphone interviewing at the end from Henry Cejudo. We'll talk about that in a sec. But yeah, I was going out. We went out to this little restaurant, had some tacos by our house. And I'm like, babe. She's like, come on, we're all starving. I'm like, Rashad's fighting. Come on. I said, I want to see this. You know what I mean? Rashad's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. Obviously, a former opponent of both of us. He beat me. You knocked him out. Make of that of what you will, motherfucker. But I was like, well, Rashad, I mean, and you'll know about this. You do former opponents, you kind of develop a bond with them that in many ways can't be broken. And it's not always the best bond, you know what I mean? But you are connected. And I was so emotionally invested. I wanted to see Rashad do well. And she's like, well, you can stream it on your phone, Mike. I went, oh, yeah, you're right. So we went to this restaurant and I look like an ignorant bastard. I'm just watching it on the phone. But Rashad, congratulations. I sent him a text, but he looked really sharp. He looked fantastic.
He did. And Gabriel Checo is a pretty tough guy. Like, he competes a lot in like competitive jiu-jitsu. He does a lot of like submission only, no gi shit. Pretty nasty guy on the ground. Excuse me. But for, you know, Rashad to take the game plan to just take him down and kind of dominate him there. He ended up in some hairy spots with some leg lock stuff. But damn, man, it was just one of those feel good moments. You know, Rashad, since him and I fought, And you and Rashad are kind of like in the same era. You guys are a little bit older than I am. So I have this kind of big brother, little brother feel with kind of you and Rashad, where like you guys have already done it and I'm trying to do the things that you guys were able to do. He's just, you know, he helped me a lot on the desk when I first started as well. And you know, he went through like a life change anyway. So like he's just like this shaman, you know, he's always got this good advice and I don't know. He's just a good ass dude.
He's just a good human, isn't it?
He is.
He's just a good fucking human being. And as you say, he does have this kind of like Zen shaman vibe to him these days. Okay, maybe left the magic mushrooms a touch. You know what I mean? But
well, like, I tell him the same shit all the time.
Like, and he's always got some on the nice mushrooms. Advice. And of course, he's a fruitarian these days. And I remember when we first started on ESPN, this is when we had this big talk about it. And he came on the podcast and he talked about, you know, some of his, what did he call it? They go see a shaman and they do the ayahuasca and all the rest of it, you know. And he has really changed as a person. He hasn't touched a drop of alcohol in forever. His diet is super strict, but not because he's trying to be the best athlete he can be, but it's just because what he chooses to put in his body. He doesn't want rotting flesh in his body and things like that. And it's very interesting to hear him talk. It's just great to see him around and still doing well.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, obviously he's got a wealth of knowledge fighting wise, you know, like you can learn a guy like me could learn a shit ton of stuff from Rashad, but just like someone who's, you know, he's been through relationship problems and he's got kids and he's dealt with, you know, the kids stuff and then finances and businesses. And there's really not anything that I've ever had a problem. Like, God damn, Rashad, what do I do here? You know, it's like, he's always got the answer, or at least Rashad's like one of those really, really smart people that wants to teach you how to find the answer on your own.
Yeah.
It's just, they're great conversations.
I can lead you to the well, but I cannot force you to drink it, young sir. Okay. Exactly. Yeah, no, so shout out, Rashad. Well done on that. So I'm not sure if you saw it. So the main event was Tyron Spong, who, by the way, Cejudo kept calling Sprung. Tyron Sprung. I was like, but then later on, I was saying to my wife, I said, oh, yeah, well, Tyron Sprung. I was like, fucking motherfucker's got me saying it. And then Calvin Cater, I was getting shit online because I kept calling him Kelvin as well. But anyway, at the end of it, Sergey Karatonov, who, if you follow the sport, you know he is, had a great career in Pride and, you know, never been in the UFC, though. Took Tyron Sprung down many times. That's how he won the fight. And I think it was a referee stoppage round two or three. Anyway, afterwards, Henry Cejudo comes in and he's doing the post-fight interviews. And it's not as easy as it looks. It is kind of nerve-wracking to do that because you've got to think of a couple of questions to summarize everything up. And anytime they don't speak English and you're going through a translator, it gets way harder, way harder, because you won't have these viral moments. But anyway, where I'm getting is that we can't give up the microphone. You know what I mean? Because if you give the fight, they are running the show and there's TV schedules and they got to go to ad breaks and this and that, you know, and we got a producer in their ear saying two questions, Mike, or three questions or whatever it is. But the translator came in and the translator had his own microphone, right? And then Sergey Karatonov took the translator's microphone and that was it. He just had open fucking forum and he was going on in Russian for fucking ages, and Chael saw and Henry Cejudo at one point, he's standing there with his hands in his pockets looking at him and saying, what the fuck am I doing here? And then Chael Sonnen, and you couldn't see him, he's just wrap it up, Henry. Sergey, that's enough. I'm gonna say it was a little bit of a shit show, but it was also awesome at the same time.
Oh man, what a perfect duo though. Like Chael is so, you know, Chael's so, he's so buttoned up, so tight, his analysis and just his presence on camera and on the microphone are just so, he's just really clean. Yeah. And he kind of, you know, Chael's a big personality, so he'll kind of suck all the air out of the room if you let him. And then you got Henry, who's just begging for the microphone. It's all
begging with a crown on and a cape. Yes. Maybe a blown up snake.
And Chael's not giving it up. So it's just the dynamic between the two.
You see Chael beat the charges?
Still undefeated.
World champion. Yeah, got off with that. All right, Harrington, what have we got, buddy? How long have we been going for here? Yeah, about an hour or so. So that's great. Okay, I want to tell you about our latest sponsor. And I'm telling you, you want to take advantage of this because I have done this. And of course, I'm talking about Truebill. Okay, listen. These days with smartphones and computers and everything you go for, you've got to sign up. You've got to give your email address and all the rest of it. And a lot of things when you sign up to these monthly subscriptions or maybe some apps that don't cost a lot of money, so you don't necessarily notice it going out of your bank account all the time, but they pile up. And I've got so many subscriptions that I didn't know, I wasn't aware of actually, that I was still paying for them until I used Truebill, until I downloaded. Okay, now Truebill is a new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions that you don't need, want, or as I said, you simply forgot about. Now, on average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel. Truebill makes it incredibly simple. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap. No calling them up, no having to be on a phone on hold forever, going down some email rabbit hole that never fucking ends. One tap of a button and it's done. And your Truebill concierge also is there whenever you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions so that you don't have to. As I said, I mean, I had no idea how many that I did have until I used Truebill. I mean, what's it called? Tunnel Bear. A VPN. I mean, I have IP Vanish now. We talk about them all the time on the show. I had no idea I was still paying. I think it was $5 a month or something, you know, but $60 a year. But it's just that on top of a bunch of others. I mean, it all mounts up. Like Matthew B, who said that in a matter of seconds, he saved $660 for the year on his DirecTV bill. He saved $120 for the year on the SiriusXM bill and $840 a year on his car insurance. Truebill has over 2 million users and has helped save them over $100 million. So don't fall for the subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/believe. Go right now, Truebill.com/believe, and it could save you thousands of dollars a year. Truebill.com/believe. Get control of your finances. Anyway, where were we? Harrington, what have we got, bud? Tee us up.
All right, let's take a look here. Okay, we did Eagle FC. I saw another one that was kind of fun, a Russian promotion. Did you guys see this? It was some team fights. They had the
listen, Anthony, this is what you got to get used to, right? We have fun at the start of the show, you know, and I like to have fun all the way through the show and get silly and have hearty laughs. We all want that. You know what I mean? But generally at this stage, we try and blend those hearty laughs into some real in-depth analysis. But Harrington keeps trying to throw it. Last time it was midgets, little people doing MMA, transgender, a man fighting a woman, all types of stuff. We just gone from Calvin Kattar, okay? One of the greatest prospects in the featherweight division. And you're going to throw what at us? I don't know what it is, but what is it?
Well, to be fair, we went from Calvin Kattar talking about a promotion that he ran into Khabib, and now the Eagle.
And Rashad Evans, Hall of Famer. Okay, continue. Mm-hmm.
Certainly. I was just going to make the connection between Khabib and the Eagle Kick, which shows up here. So you have two guys who are faced off. Ostensibly, they're going to fight each other in this team tournament.
Oh, I've seen this shit.
Yeah. So they get a little, they get into it in what's supposed to be, you know, just a press face-off. Security has to get involved. Right.
Oh,
so the guys get separated. They're still jawing, talking to each other back and forth, et cetera, et cetera. But remember, right, these are teams. So you have the supporters on both sides. And, you know, with a shit talking going the way it's going, nobody's going to sit there and just take that. Right.
Hey, listen, fair play. And I wholeheartedly apologize, Harrington, because this is great. And I do want to talk. Look at this guy.
Oh, shit.
Look at that. Oh, my God.
Oh, he just flying drop kicked him right out of the chair.
If you're an audio only listener, head over to YouTube, subscribe, ring the bell on the Believe You Me podcast channel because you want to see that. I've seen a lot of this popping up in like Poland and Russia and all these crazy team MMA. And the first time I saw it, it blew my mind to see 10 men or however many it is in the octagon and they're just smashing the shit out of each other. Brian, see if you can find some footage of an actual fight.
Would you do that?
I mean, not now, because I can't even do one-on-one MMA. I can't even do one-on-one, let alone Chael Sonnen and 5-on-1. You know what I mean? But I don't know. I mean, I'd rather not.
If I could avoid it, I probably would.
Yeah. Like when I was coming up as a fighter, they're like, listen, Mike, there's no UFC or nothing like that, but there is this promotion, and we will pay you handsomely if you go in there. Five of your mates, gather up five of your mates, and then you're going to fight five other people. And we can give you a few quid. I'd say, fuck it, I'm broke. Let's go. You know?
You've seen this pillow fighting championship stuff that's happening?
I have not, but look at this.
Oh, my God. Look at this.
Look at this. This is crazy.
Look how hyped they are.
Well, you have to be. You're about to ensue in a gigantic brawl. Look at them.
Who's shooting takedown? No way I'd shoot a takedown.
No, you do not at least go for an armbar. In the street, you're going to get kicked in the head straight away.
Some
of these guys have skill, though. Look at that. He's done.
Yeah, he's finished.
And then it ends up like 2 or 3 on 1. Yeah, he's done.
Oh, I'll
tell you what,
the
gray team is better than the black team.
For sure. Oh, there's head stomps and shit.
Foot stomps. Look at this.
And these refs aren't doing nothing.
There's 4 referees in
They're
the ring
doing
as well,
anything.
Audio listeners. Oh, my God.
All right, there's a ref stoppage right there.
There's 2 people hammer, 4 people hammer fisting and stomping on one person. And then, yes, brother, we get great victory today. Yes. I mean, it looks like fucking fun. I'll be honest. I would watch it. Can't see it taking off, though.
Yeah, I don't see that. They're not getting any big network deals, I promise you that.
Oh, but it's good. I mean, if you love a bit of basic violence, you want to see one person get battered off 5 Russians.
We should do a fight companion watching that shit.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that would do great numbers. Jesus Christ. All right, fair play, Harrington. I like that. I like that a lot. What else we got, bud?
All right, well, this one is a little bit more close to home for new co-host Anthony Smith. Jan Blachowicz, unfortunately, is out of his bout in March in Columbus against Alexander Rakic. From what I heard officially, there's no word yet about whether or not they're going to keep their pairing together or if Rakic is going to stay at the top of the card and look for a new opponent. But I feel like if anybody's got the scoop, it might be the man I'm talking to right now.
Come on. Close to the situation is a bit of an understatement.
Yeah, They called, well, we were in Anaheim, so that would have been Thursday. Thursday, UFC called and asked if I was interested. Jan Blachowicz was injured. Rakic needed an opponent. That was obviously the fight that I wanted. And I said, yeah, I'm in. There's
Did
obviously
you do some, any by then because obviously you had surgery recently.
Yeah, that was the kind of the sticking point. We did. I said yes, I'm interested. I'd like to take the fight. I was already going to Anaheim where the UFC, you know, PI staff were going to be. They wanted to check me out. Kind of went through that whole deal. They like it's a little earlier than I wanted to, but we could have made it work. So I said, yeah, I'll do it. And then they wanted to get through the weekend because it's a big pay-per-view fight weekend. They got the Francis Ngannou heavyweight title fight, you know, and then Davidson Figueiredo, Brandon Moreno, huge fight. All the staff are kind of tied up. So they said, you know, let's talk Monday or Tuesday. We ended up not talking until Wednesday. And I think they just wanted to keep that fight together. So it sounds like they're moving that entire fight to another card.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because I was talking to Chito Vera at the weekend and he said there was a potential that they asked him if he'd fight there, maybe the main event. And he said, yeah, of course, but he still hasn't got any news either. So when you saw Jan Blachowicz lose the belt to Glover, how much do you wish that you got a chance to fight Jan for the belt? Because I'm assuming, listen, you feel like you can beat all these guys. Mm-hmm. I know how it is. Just because you lose a fight doesn't mean shit. Doesn't mean the journey's over. Doesn't mean you stop believing in yourself. You tweak some things. Like we said before about Dan Hooker, you don't have to go change your fucking weight classes and all the rest of it. No insult there, by the way. But like, where do you think you're at in terms of getting a title fight? And what are you going to do? Because I'll say it again, that fight against Ryan Spann, bro, I'm telling you, that sent a fucking message to whoever the champs were and the top contenders that you're fucking coming.
Yeah, I hope they take that seriously because I haven't been more motivated ever. So I think that it worked out the way that it's supposed to work out, though. I really do. I know people think I'm bullshitting when I say this. I was genuinely happy to watch Glover Teixeira win that title.
I get that.
I mean that genuinely. I really do. He deserves it. He's put the time in. He's one of the nicest humans on the planet. Even after fighting him, I know I can beat him. I think he knows I can beat him. And I think the storyline just works out perfect. I think, I don't want to like sound pretentious or whatever, but if you take kind of the three best dudes in the division, as far as the way that they treat people, their skill set, the work that they put in, their long journeys, Glover, Jan and myself, I feel like we're like those three guys where we busted our fucking asses. We've been around a long time. We've always treated people right. And really, really put the time and work in. There's a situation that exists where all three of us at one point in time get a hold of title. And I don't think that happens very often. So I was happy to see Jan Blachowicz have it. I was even happier to see Glover Teixeira take it. And I think Glover Teixeira can beat Jiří Procházka. I know so that people, they're kind of counting out Glover out there, but I think he can win that fight. It's very winnable for him. So I think that leaves me in a cool position where I can win another one. It puts me right into a title shot with Glover Teixeira. And then, you know, I won't feel bad taking it from him at all. No, you know, as much as I like him.
But what a storyline. It's the perfect scenario for you. That's the perfect scenario. You get to go back in there, fight for the belt, and beat Glover for it. So you get redemption for the loss, but of course you become the champ. And I agree. Listen, I am a big fan of Jiří Procházka and watching the way that he fights. And he's so unorthodox and he's unique in his approach and his style. And when he can deliver, he's got a devastating striking, but he does leave a lot of openings. He is very hittable. And Glover, I would assume, when it comes to being well-rounded, is one of the most dangerous, well-rounded threats in all of the UFC. Then you combine that with his experience. You combine that because experience is so valuable. So I think it's a tough fight for both men, but I still see a world or a possibility, and I don't even know if it's 50-50, it might even be more favorable for Glover, that he's still the champion after that fight.
Yeah, I do too. And I just see that I see a lot of holes. And I've looked at Prohaska from my own perspective of what I do to him or where do I see holes, where do I see opportunities. Is he super exciting? 100%. I love to watch that guy fight. I love everything about his style. I love his craziness, his unpredictability, his martial arts mindset. You know, he's very martial artist based. But he does a lot of things wrong. He's not super defensively responsible. His ground game isn't there anywhere near where it needs to be. He's not a fantastic wrestler. And he does, like you said, he does get hit a lot. Glover Teixeira, hits as hard as anybody I've ever met. He's got a fantastic wrestling and top game. And, you know, at the end of the day, if Dominic Reyes can take a man down and mount him, Glover Teixeira goddamn will too.
Oh.
And if he mounts you, that's just where you stay.
We've talked about this before, and I mentioned it frequently on the podcast, but I want to go back to that moment, if you don't mind, Anthony. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know, listen, as fighters, we don't mind discussing our losses. Of course, we'd rather focus on fights that we win. But you bring up the fight with Glover there, and I always say one of the greatest moments for me in the sport was when, you, unfortunately, you're face down on the octagon, right? You're on all fours. And Glover Teixeira is raining down fucking blows, and he knocks out your teeth, right? And you hand them to the referee. The Glover Teixeira, he says, "I'm sorry, bro." And you say, "It is what it is." It yeah. is. I mean, what a fucking sequence of events that was. I mean, the what whole do you say fight, to me saying that?
Just the whole fight was crazy. Like the. That was the first time that I'd ever known in a fight, like while I was in the actual fight, that I probably can't do this. I probably can't win this one. I'd never been in a situation where I stood up off of the stool and I knew that my whole goal was just to make it through the end of the fight. I knew that I knew at that moment the mountain was too tall to climb at that point in time. I was too tired. I was blind on one side because my orbital was broken. And I just, every time he touched it, it just made my whole body cringe. So I was doing what I could, and we were kind of talking to each other the whole time, you know, like there'd been some back and forth in the media a little bit and all really kind of tongue in cheek, like kind of joking with each other. But he was like, "Well, if we end up on the ground, I'm going to finish him fast." And I said, "No goddamn way. I'm a black belt and I'm very proud of that. Like, I do a lot of jiu-jitsu."
With how many submissions?
A lot, you know, like
a lot. Yeah. So you don't 15, even know the number.
Yeah. 15 or 16 submissions in my career. So, and so we kind of went back and forth. Well, the whole first two rounds were mostly striking, which I won. Third round, he hurts me. We ended up doing some grappling. And he's not like really, he's not slicing my guard up. He's not smoking me. He's beating me up a little bit, but he's not hurting me jiu-jitsu wise. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying, "I told you, old man, my jiu-jitsu is not that bad."
Oh, did you say that?
I did. Oh, I said, "I told you it wasn't that bad, old man." And he said, "Yeah, bro, it's actually pretty good, bro." So I went to say something else. And as soon as I opened my mouth, he hit me with an elbow. And that's when he broke my teeth off. So then the next round is when I ended up on all fours. And you know how it is with those custom mouthpieces, they're really tight. We lose a couple teeth and they don't fit anymore. So my mouthpiece was rolling around in my mouth. And when he punched me, my teeth flew out. So I, for whatever reason, it was just my reaction was just to grab him. But now I'm like in a fist fight, but I'm holding on to two teeth. So I was like, ref.
It's just mental. You know, you're in there. Yeah. You're in the middle of a fight. Hold on a minute. My fucking teeth. I'll need those. Yeah. Hold on, Glover. Just give me a second, you prick. Yeah. Just grab those. We'll move on to some actual questions from the believers in just a moment. And by the way, if you want to send in a video question for me or Anthony, please direct many to Anthony now. He's going to be on here every week with us. Send it into bympod@gmail.com. Let me ask you this, Anthony. After that fight, you probably saw some comments from myself and other people at the desk and whatnot that said, "Oh, I thought your coach, Mark Montoya, should
God,
have
I'm so mad at you guys.
I know. But I said he should have stopped the fight. And Mark Montoya, I believe, is a fucking phenomenal coach. Mm-hmm. I obviously don't know him too well, but I know what I see. And I see his corner advice. I see his work. I see how he interacts with his fighters. And I'm a huge fan of it. But there was another fight as well that I did. I forget his name. He was with
Mark?
Yeah. What's he called? He's kind of like, he looks like a fucking caveman or something. He's a fucking.
Yeah. Yeah. God damn it. He's not even in the UFC anymore.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be insulting to him there.
No. I know exactly.
He took a heavy fucking beating on that against Mike, someone or whatever. I forget what it was.
Yeah, I remember. I was working that event too.
And his guy took a heavy one that night, and I said that then. So I hope the running theme in the gym isn't fuck Bisping. Nah. But like when you hear guys like us saying that on the night, how did that make you feel?
To be honest with you, I felt a little bit betrayed.
Were you pissed?
Yeah. Well, no, not if my feelings were hurt. Like I felt a little bit betrayed, and that's only if I was just a fighter, I would have been like, "Eh, fuck it, whatever." But like, I think because I do work with you guys and you know, it was DC and Felder more than anything. because it was just like, I felt very attacked. Like, what are they doing? He doesn't deserve to be in there. Like, almost like, I don't know. Like, I had this overwhelming feeling like, I'm fucking good. Like, I'll figure it out. You know, like, I don't need anyone to save me. So I think some of it's my ego. But it was just, I don't know. I feel like it's very similar to the Dominic Cruz DC thing. Like, if there's ever a problem, like if I ever had a problem with something that we were doing together on the desk or even on the show here, I wouldn't bring it up here. Sure. I would talk about it. We would talk about it on the phone or behind the scenes or whatever, and then we'd figure it out. I just felt like DC and Felder, the way that they were so upset about, even Chael, just going crazy and posting videos and getting on YouTube, like, you can call me and we can talk about it. Like, we know each other.
To be fair, at that moment in time, they're talking about your coach. I haven't seen the commentary because I was there live, so I was watching it ringside with Brendan Fitzgerald. We were waiting to do the post-fight show.
Right.
So I haven't heard the commentary, so I can't comment on the commentary. But what I will say is, yeah, that was probably directed at your coach and not you personally, of course.
No, 100%. It was like they were saying it because –
because you weren't good enough.
I wasn't good
enough. You needed protecting.
Right.
And so you took it.
It's ego.
Which, by the way, it's a human emotion. We take things personally, certainly as fighters. Like, I mean, I don't know, but I would assume I take that shit close to heart. I do take that personal. Mm-hmm. You're going to insult my fighting ability. You're going to make out that I can't fucking handle myself in an octagon and I need my coach to step in. How fucking dare you? I'm controlling this show. This is my career and I don't need my fucking coach to step in. Was it something like that?
Well, yeah, and they don't even have the opportunity to do that. I'd never been in this position before ever where I'd been in such a bad spot where even they should have considered stopping. It's never happened before. But like through the years, you see someone like a coach throw the towel in and I'd be like with my team and we'd be on the card or something. Like, if you guys ever do that, I'll fire you. Like, I will fucking fire you. Like, you might as well walk to the locker room by yourself because I'll never stand with you again. And I'm very serious when I said that, but I said that not expecting to ever be in that position. But they all remember that. So when we get in the back and, you know, then the commission comes back and they're like, why didn't you throw the towel in?
Sorry.
And like, they all look
one
at
second,
me.
Guys.
Oh, you're good.
Mike, when you lean in, I'm getting the audio bounce back off your microphone.
Oh, my bad. Fuck, I didn't put it. Yeah, the fucking headphones right there. Is this okay, though, Brian?
Yeah. Yeah, just when you lean in to listen, I'm getting him back.
Okay, I won't do that because guess what? I bought these, and for some reason, they're not working.
Sorry to interrupt, Anthony.
Not at all. You look like you've seen a fucking ghost, and you can leave this in if you want, Brian. It's okay. Yeah. We don't care. Yeah. You know, this is the rawness of the show.
Rawness.
Yeah. Sorry. But I will say this. He was making a very eloquent point and he was deep on an emotional journey there, Brian. and we were all on it. We were on that roller coaster. We were there along for the ride.
I know. That's why I don't want this to come out.
You fucking ruined it. Sorry. Anthony, I apologize for the producer, Brian McKay.
It's all right.
B. McKay is right. But sometimes Brian is wrong. Finish up your point, Anthony.
Okay. Well, the whole point was the commission comes in and they're kind of pissed because Mark let it go. And they're saying, why didn't you stop it? Did you even consider throwing in the towel? And my whole coaching staff, they kind of look at me and I'm getting strapped to a gurney, you know, like they're taking me straight to the hospital. And they're all looking at me like, that's his fucking fault. Like, he's the one who said that can't happen. So, you know, I had to go to the hospital though. I didn't get to go to the post-fight press conference. I didn't do any interviews. I didn't have an opportunity to defend them by saying that I took that out of their hands a long time ago. And I cornered Jason Herzog. Like, I back people into corners on purpose. Like, when they come, you know, the referee comes to the locker room and they say, you know, we're going to give you the rules. Do you have any questions? I always corner them and say, what does it sound like when you're about to stop a fight? And what needs to happen so that that doesn't happen? I do that for two reasons. One, I want to know what it sounds like if I'm about to finish somebody so that I can pour it on when they're getting close.
Of course.
Or if I'm on the wrong end of that, I need to know how long I have and what I need to do before you stop it. So I make
And let me ask you, I guarantee there's a third thing that you say as well. which is what I used to say. I didn't put those two questions quite as eloquently as you just did, but I would say words to those effect. But I always say, hey, and listen, don't you fucking stop.
Don't
this
you fucking
minutes.
Stop.
I'm, I got this. I can take it. And they say, hey, Mike, you do your job. I'll do mine. Okay. Yeah. But I'm like, but seriously.
But then I make them repeat it. I make them repeat it. Like, okay, this is what you're saying. Yes. Okay. Let me get this straight again. So then when I'm in there, I never expected this to happen, but it happened. And then I'm hearing what he said. So I kick back to what he told me in the locker room. I know what it's going to sound like when he's about to stop it. And I know what I need to do. Now he knows he's already told me that in the locker room 20 minutes ago. So now he has to stand by his word. Even if he wants to stop it, as long as I'm doing the things that he told me I needed to do in that moment, he can't stop the fight. I held him to his word. Now I've taken the choice away from my coaches, and now I've handcuffed the referee. So like everyone's kind of fucked. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And this is why you are needed on the show, because everyone's had enough of my fucking stories for the last 5 years now. And I'm kind of running out of them. Do you know what I mean? We need a fresh perspective. That's why
I got 5 years of them for sure.
2.0 is going to get bigger. It's going to get better. If you haven't already subscribed, please do. And we will finish off with some questions. Brian, what do we have?
Ooh, actually, real quick before we get to questions, let me just jump in and say, if you like this content and you want to get over 300 episodes that you can't find anywhere else, head on over to GasDigitalNetwork.com, use the promo code BYM, get yourself a 7-day free trial, check out the entire catalog ad-free and uncensored. Also, if you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you check out podcasts, hit that subscribe button and leave a review. 5 stars if you can. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you. Appreciate all of us.
Sorry.
Appreciate Brian reading out a question.
If you want to send in a question, bympod@gmail.com.
Just said that. Okay. See, by the way, we just want to say this, Anthony, so you know, it's okay to abuse Harrington. Now, that said, we don't want to actually emotionally abuse him. And I think this is what people don't realize, that it's a bit of banter. It's a bit of fun. Harrington does great work. But we're also going to talk shit, because no one wants to see four dudes sitting around going, you're great, you're fantastic. No one wants to see that. Brian likes to pick on him the most. I'm way behind him. Lewis used to fucking murder him on air. So feel free. Feel free. And you're new. Trust me. The frustration will grow. It will get there.
Well, I have a question here that may or may not get us in trouble. So this is from Christian James.
All right. What's up, BYM Podcast? In the spirit of Harrington's ridiculous questions, talking about midgets fighting the UFC. You take a 125er and a 135er. Combined, they weigh 260. Francis weighs in at 265. What 125er and 135er combined do you think has the best chance of beating Francis? I'm going to take Corey Sandhagen because he's long, he's got reach, he can throw some flying knees, and he might be able to hurt him a little bit with kicks. And, hell, I'm going to bring him out of retirement. I'm going to take Triple C because he can wrestle, so one guy can grab his leg, and one guy can try to kick him. Who you guys got? I know it's a ridiculous question, but come on, answer the question.
No, it's fun. I'll tell you what, first of all, we just need to discuss that beard. Holy shit.
Some epic shit.
That's a fucking beard and a half. I can't grow one. Can you grow a beard, Anthony?
No, I can't at all. Like right here, it grows a little bit on the bottom, and then I get like a white trash mustache. It just looks real dirty.
Yeah.
And then it grows in super sketchy right here.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a little bit of what you might call a beard. And my wife wants me to have something, well, maybe not quite like that, because that was a little on the fucking ridiculous side. But you know, like a nice, luscious, thick beard. And my wife's like, just let it grow out, Michael. I'm like, woman, I'm 42 years old. I know what happens. It just gets scruffy looking. It doesn't get full, luscious.
I just look like I need a shower.
I just look like I need to freshen up and clean up because I look like a scruffy bastard that's about to go on TV. They're like, oh, we're not sure about that. I'm going to say this right now, and I don't know how you feel, but I don't think there's any combination of 25er and 35er that's taking on Francis and fucking Ngannou. I just don't see it.
No, I think he ragdolls him and tosses. I feel like he played with Henry Cejudo like a soccer ball.
He would kick him in the face and kick him right out of the fucking octagon. Yeah. The only way you would have to pick two people that had the best ever jiu-jitsu. I don't know if you know who Zulo Zinho was. He fought in Pride.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was fucking gigantic. And he came to the gym for a bit where I was training. He was signed to that team. And I grappled with him, which most of the time didn't go too well. But one time, because he was a big, heavy, fat guy, I got around his back. I got around his back and there you go. If you can get to the man's back and choke him out, then they could.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, man. I'm
just
not so
a straight
sure
fight.
That.
If you're trying to get to his back, though, he's probably punching. That means you're within arm's distance. That's a problem.
Yeah, the only way he could be is if, like, Cejudo attacked him, like, and was, like, going toe-to-toe with him, and then Davison Figueiredo jumps on the bike.
And then pulled out a gun and shot him twice.
Correct. Correct, yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't think so.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for the question. I appreciate that. Brian, what else we got, bud?
All right, I got a question here from Mr. Ethan Davis.
Hey, guys. Ethan here from Arlington, Virginia. I just had a quick question for Bisbing about The Ultimate Fighter. So everybody knows that reality TV is a bunch of BS. And I was just wondering, what do they do or what kind of instructions do they give you to kind of manufacture drama on there? Or in this case, is it all genuine? I'd just love some insight about that. And then also just want to say, Harrington, you rule. We all know that you're the backbone of the show.
Easy.
You have the name. You have the experience, the stories, the connections, the insight, all of that. So we know what you're bringing to the table. But let's be honest, how much do you really do on a weekly basis, man? And then, Brian, who even are you? So, Harrington, keep up the good work. Wear a tank top if you want to. Don't let these guys bully you.
Jesus Christ, this is not a public service announcement to make Harrington feel better. Okay. Edit this bit out of the show, in fact. No, well, we spoke about this before. It's all called a bit of banter, a bit of fun. The answer to that question is,
Michael, what do you really do on a weekly basis?
Oh, is that what he said? Because I lost him for a split second. Yeah. Is that what he said?
Yeah.
The fucking motherfucker. Hey, hey, listen, I'll tell you what I don't do, walking around looking like a weirdo. Michael, look at my eyeball. I can't say shit with that, can I? I'm a very busy man. I organize Anthony Smith. I do a lot of things. No, they don't do any of that on The Ultimate Fighter. And I don't know if you've got any interaction with The Ultimate Fighter, Anthony, but I was on there as a contestant and I coached it twice. So I kind of know. Obviously, we have rules that we have to follow in terms of you can't leave the house and there's no mobile phones and all the rest of it, you know, and you're going to go training a couple of times a day, blah, 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 shit like that. But there is nothing manufactured about anything, and they don't need to. You take 16 fucking guys that are all fighters, throw them in a house for 6 weeks with no interaction and they can't escape one another. You do not need to encourage drama because it's going to happen. And you also throw in a fridge full of alcohol that is going to further accentuate any problems. And you can get whatever you want as well. There's a phone. Well, when I was on there, there's a phone and you just pick them and say, yeah, I want this. I want to, because you can't go to the supermarket. You can't go to the grocery store. So you can order whatever you want. And that includes alcohol as well. And yes, we're there to fight and we're there to train and all the rest of it. But a bit of it does get consumed and that creates a bit of drama.
Yeah, I came on as a guest coach a couple times when Stipe was coaching it, and it, from everything I seen, I didn't spend a shit ton of time there. I was never a contestant on The Ultimate Fighter on the show or anything, but seems pretty real to me, and it seems like a bunch of egos. You know, I expected it to feel more like a bunch of hopped up, angry men just, you know, chomping at the bit.
But
I got like a real weird, like, oh, these guys are unhappy. These guys want to go home.
These,
like,
poor miserable bastards.
Yeah, these miserable bastards. I've kind of felt bad
for them. In weeks.
Yeah, I didn't. There wasn't all the anger and egos that I expected. I didn't hang out at the house very long, though. I'm sure if you hang out there long enough, you get that. But I was like, man, these are a bunch of young men that just want to fucking go home.
I've probably told this before. I hung out at the house too much when I was coaching. You know, like I had the whole of Las Vegas. This is years ago, you know, when I was drinking a little heavily, shall we say. And, you know, I could have gone to all Las Vegas. There's many nightclubs and bars and lounges and places you can go to. And if you want to get drunk, get drunk. But this wasn't the plan. We went over to watch the fights. I'm a jiu-jitsu coach, mixes a ton of those caipirinhas, the Brazilian drink, right? And he did like a huge fucking like blender full of it, you know. And I didn't know how strong that shit was, right? Because I was hammered, and I can't remember leaving the house, but I do know I was thrown out. I was forcibly ejected by the producers. Like, get the fuck out. I was hammered. And then the next day on the Sunday morning, I showed up at the gym, and the main producer came up and he got in my face. He was fucking pissed because I grabbed the cameraman off one of the cameramen. I'm like, hey, let's see how you like it. And I'm filming him and all types of stuff. They're like, you ever touch one of those cameras again? Right. Well, yeah. He was fucking pissed. He was pissed. I'm like, bro, come on. But that was over 10 years ago. That was 11 years ago. All right. And I think that will wrap that up for the first ever episode of the Believe You Me podcast with Anthony, co-host Anthony Smith, as the regular co-host. Thank you, Anthony. That was great fun. No doubt as we explore and continue on this journey, it's going to be a lot of fun as well. So thank you very, very much. Any final words from yourself?
No, I don't think so, man. That was a lot of fun. I'm excited, man. We can just keep growing this thing. Let's get crazy and keep this shit show running.
There we go, buddy. And remember, so from now on, start sending in the questions to Anthony as well as myself. And that's it. We appreciate you. Thank you very much. As I said before, if you haven't already subscribed, do so. Ring the bell. Find the podcast wherever you find it. Tell your friends and family, all that shit. Enjoy your week, and we'll be back on Thursday. Until then, take care.